Okay, so as I said, we're on page 20, about in Yoma, about three or four lines from the bottom, beginning of Oschof. We started talking about Shaul HaMelech. We talked about his counting of the Jewish people and how he didn't do it directly because you're not allowed to, up Yalacha. And we talked about the mistakes that he made, in particular the one with the war against Amalek that cost him his kingship. The last thing we talked about is, on the other hand, the Pasuk introduces him with the words Ben Shana Shol B'molchoi, which means that he was a great tzaddik. He was like a one-year-old baby who didn't have a virus. So now, continuing on that topic, Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Mipnei Malo Nimshach Malchus Beis Shol. Why did Shol's kingship not last? Meaning, in other words, now, okay, we know why, because of the story with Amalek, and also the earlier one with Gilgal, where he had also disobeyed Hashem's instructions through Shmuel. But the question really is, why did Hashem put him into those situations in the first place, that where he's going to end up tripping up, and he's going to end up losing the kingship for himself? The reason is, because there was no flaw in Shaul's family. Unlike David's family, where they were descended from Rus, and throughout David's life, they were always harassing him about the fact that he's descended from Rus, and people were claiming even that he's not kosher lover b'kohol, but with Shaul, there was no such thing. So the problem is, therefore, it actually explains kings, future kings who would come from Shaul, would tend to be very proud to hold themselves higher than the rest of the Jewish people, because they would say, we have great yichus as and you do not. We don't appoint a leader over the tzibur, unless there's metaphorically a box or a basket of shrotzim hanging behind him. Meaning, in other words, that there was some kind of flaw in his family. For example, with David involving Rus. Now, we're not saying a flaw that would actually make them posel lover b'kohol. The fact is that David was not, but some kind of flaw that makes it that now he won't become too proud, because they can always throw that up against him. She'im tazuach daite olav. This way, if he starts getting too proud, then they tell him, look behind you and realize you have very little to pride yourself on over the rest of us. Now, Marsha does point out, it does have to be, it can't be, for example, now you can have a pagam in a person's family can be from his father's side or from his mother's. From his father's side, it would be better known, for one thing, because the after all, what shevet the person belongs to goes according to his father. But also the Gemara mentions actually in Kiddushin, it was a couple of weeks back in Daf Yomi, and in connection with a whole discussion about Yuchsin, that men are more familiar with matters of Yichus, and when they're gonna argue, and one is gonna try to bring up one something against the other one, he's gonna mention matters of Psula Yichus. So therefore, so when you have something from the father's side, then it's much better known. Then actually you can't have a king or a powerness of the community have such a thing. That would be a gnai. So we have to be talking about that. And in fact, we find in the halacha of who's eligible to be on a Sanhedrin that judges dinin nefashos, it has to be that if only imay Yisrael, if only his mother was a born Jew, he's possible for that. It has to be that his father was a born Jew. So therefore, here we're talking about that it was kupashol shrotzim, that's only shrotzim, which the point is, Marshall says, a sheretz, a very limited degree of tumah. And so therefore, that plus the fact that we're saying it hangs behind him represents, we're talking about a psul, or not a psul, but a flaw in his mother's side, yichus, that's the kind that he should have, like David HaMelech had, as opposed to something from his father's side, that's much more serious. Continues the Gemara. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rab, Mipnei Ma Nena Shol. Why was Shol punished? And again, why did Hashem put him in such a situation where he's going to wind up losing the kingship? The reason is because he was mochel inappropriately on his kavod. He was a king, and after all, a king is not supposed to be melech shemochel al kavodei ein kavodei mochel. So, and the reason is the Gemara in Kiddushin mentions it. Marsha refers to, because the kavod of the king is the kavod of Hashem, and he can't be mochel on the kavod of Hashem. Or the Rambam phrases it a little differently: that the kavod of the king is the kavod of the entire Jewish people. So what happened? Shenemar, the pasuk says. So you have like this: Shaul was anointed as king by Shmuel, and then it becomes well known. Shmuel gathers together everybody and tells them publicly that Shaul is the one who's been chosen by Hashem. But the Pasuk says, and now the Pasuk says, many people did join Sheol, and they said, you know what, he's our legitimate king, so Hashem chose him, therefore we're going to accept him as king. But the Pasuk says, Vnei Blial Omru, but you had Rishoyim, Blial literally means Bli oil, that they don't have the yoke of Omafas Shemayim on them. They said, Maya Sheinu Zeh, how is this guy going to save us? They're figuring he's from Shevet Binyamin, which is the least important of the Shvatim, etc., by Zuhu. So they mocked him, and they did not bring him any presents, like you usually do when a king is first coronated, you bring him presents. And the Pasuk says that he remained quiet. He did not take any action against them. And then the Pasuk goes on to say that Nachash Amoni came to attack the city of Yovish Gilad in Evra Yaudin, and Sheol gathered together the whole army. That was, we mentioned at the beginning of the Sugya, that Sheol gathered people and numbered them the Bozek, which we said meant with broken pieces of earthenware, and they went and fought against Ammon and defeated them. Then everybody said, you know what, we should accept Sheol as king, and people were saying, Miha Oima, Sheol Yimachalenu, who are those people who were saying, is Sheol going to be our king? We should take those people and we should execute them. And Sheol says, no, lo yumas ish hayom hazeh, nobody should be killed now because Hashem saved us with such a tremendous victory, and therefore we shouldn't do that. So that was showing. So it's really twice in a certain sense that he showed that he's willing to forego his cover. First, when these people are making fun of him, and now when he's saying, when people are ready to take revenge against those people, he's saying, don't do that. So for that, we're saying is why he ended up losing his kingship, because he's not supposed to do that. Actually, Iyun Yaakov points out when the Gemara is quoting the words Vayal Nachash Amoni, what it means is that the question is, why did it happen so soon after Sheol became king that he has this tremendous battle that he has to fight against Bnei Ammon? He can't start his kingship in a more peaceful way. And the reason is because he was inappropriately quiet against these Bnei Belial, therefore Hashem had to sort of force the issue by making Nachash Amoni is going to attack Eretz Yisrael, and Sheol has to go to war, and that way people will finally accept Sheol as the legitimate king. Sheol was moichel on his cupboard in a way that he shouldn't have been. So the Gemara says in this connection, speaking of a Talmud Chacham being moichel on his kavod and when not, va'amar Rav Yochanan v'shum Rashbi or Rav Shimon ben Yehud Tzadok, kol Talmud Chacham she'ena noikim v'noito k'nachash, any Talmud Chacham who does not noikim means take revenge, and noito means to bear a grudge, k'nachash, like a snake, ain't a Talmud Chacham, such a person is not a Talmud Chacham. Now, what does that mean? So Rashi explains, in other words, that he keeps it in his heart. So we're not talking about necessarily that he goes and takes nekama, but he is keeping it in his heart. He's not just letting it go. Now, there are many different explanations. First of all, the Gemara itself is going to point out that you're not allowed to do nekima and netiro lo sikim v'lo sitar, the Pasuk says, and the Gemara is going to define it over here. So what are we saying? A Talmud Chacham is supposed to do that. But before we get to that, first, what's the connection? What's the comparison to a snake? So Maharshal says, in other words, the point is that even if the Talmud Chacham was saying there is a case where he should be noikim v'noiter, but it should be like a minor thing. Like you have, so the nachash, what does a snake do? Hu yeshuf charosh, Hashem says to the nachash, you, the human beings will crush your head, v'ata t'shufenu akev, you will only bite them on the heel, like a very unimportant part of the body. So the same way, if a Talmud Chacham is going to be noikim v'noiter, it has to be in a very unimportant thing. If he does nothing at all, or if he does too much, then he's not learning from the snake, and then he's not acting like the way a Talmud Chacham should act. Anyway, different Mephoshim point out different other things. Another point is Anaf Yosef brings the point, a snake does not poison people for its hanah, because everything tastes to it like dirt anyway. So it's doing it just because the Eibishter gave it its nature that it's going to bite people. So the same way, the Talmud Chacham, when he's doing this Nekima and Netira to people who have wronged him, he's not doing it because he has anything personal against them, and he's doing it for the enjoyment of it. He's doing it strictly because of the covet of the Torah, which he doesn't want to, he can't brook any challenges to that. So the Gemara asks, "Vak sivloi sikim vloi sitter." What do you mean? The Pasuk says you're not allowed to take revenge and you're not allowed to bear a grudge. The answer is "Ahu b'mamun hu d'chdiv." The answer is that's talking about cases involving mammon, where somebody did, where somebody wronged you in a matter of mammon, then the Torah is saying you're not allowed to be noikim and you're not allowed to be noiter. You have to just forget about it and be moichel the person. Kidatanya, as in fact, detanya, as in fact, we learn in a blaisa. Ezri nekima ve'ezri netira. What is the definition of loisikrim and what is the definition of loisiter? Nekima means omrlai hashileni kaudrumcha umagolcha. Reuven says to Shimon, lend me your magol, your kaudrumcha, would mean your axe, magolcha, which is the gear says, printed in the Gemara, is your sickle that you use to harvest grain. Omrlai lav, and Shimon says no. Lamacha Omaloi hu hashileni kaudrumcha. The next day Shimon comes and asks, lend me your axe. Omaloi, and Reuben says, Eini roitzel ashilcha kedeh shalei shaltani. I don't want to lend you, just like you didn't lend me. Zuhi nekima, that would be the definition of nekima. The ezri netira. What is the definition then of netira? Omaloi hashileni magolcha or kadrumcha. Where Reuben says, lend me your sickle or your axe. Omalei lav, and Shimon says no. Lamacha omalei hashileni kadrumcha, or a different girsa, halukcha. He says, lend me your shirt. And the other one says, Helach, here, I'll lend it to you. I'm not going to act like you. You didn't lend me. So he puts a guilt trip on him, basically. Zuhi netira, that is the definition of netira. So we see that in those examples, we're talking about a matter of mammon, therefore implying that there's not a problem of nekima and netira when it comes to a matter of tsar haguf, where he actually wrongs him in person, where he harms him physically or mentally or whatever. An interesting point is, by the way, now the girsa we have here in Ein Yaakov is that the first time he's saying, lend me your axe, And the other guy the next day asks for an axe, and then the second time with Natira, it's a sickle versus an axe. The Girsa in the Gemara is actually first he asks for a sickle, then the other one asks for an axe, then in the second one in Natira he asks for an axe, and the other one asks for a shirt. So the Shagas Arya in his Pirush on Yoma called Gvura Sari says an interesting possibility. We're talking about over here one continuous story. Reuven goes to Shimon and says, lend me your sickle. And Shimon says, no. The next day, Shimon goes to Reuven and says, lend me your axe. And Reuven says, no, because you didn't lend me. Shimon is the victim of Nekama. Reuven has done inappropriately by doing Nekama to him. Now, if in the future Reuven comes to him and says, lend me your shirt, and he says, sure, I'll lend it to you. I'm not going to be like you. You could think maybe Shimon has the right to do that. After all, Reuven did wrong by him the first time by doing Nekima. Maybe he's allowed to do Netira back. Therefore, the Gemara is saying that no, even then, he's still not allowed to. So it's one continuous story going back and forth between them. Anyway, the Gemara asks, but Tsar de Gufaloi? So you're telling me even if it was Tsar involving his own body, involving that the guy actually injured him or insulted him or whatever, you're telling me that he's not allowed to do Nekima or Netira? Or for that matter, we're saying that no, there's no problem with the Talmud Chacham doing the Kimo and the Tira for that. We learn in a Braisa, Hanel Lovin Ve'en and Oilvin, those who are insulted and they don't insult back, Shreiman Cherposin Ve'en and Meshivin, they listen, they hear other people making fun of them and they don't respond. They serve Hashem out of love, and they're happy with Yisurin because they realize that whatever insults or whatever that they receive is all mina shemayim, whether to clean up their averus, whether Yisurin me'ava, whatever it is. On such people, the pasuk says, those who love Hashem will be like the sun when it comes out in its full strength. For one thing, the comparison is, just like we find the sun heard the moon complaining, and the sun didn't respond. So the same way a person who does that is acting like the sun, and therefore he deserves that schar. If it's an appropriate place to be hecheir tochiach, then you do that. But here we're saying that, on the other hand, he shouldn't be noikim v'noiter. So what are you telling me a tamar chacham should? And the answer is, fine, he's not answering back. But he can still consider in his heart, he can still hold it in his heart, which means, therefore, Rashi says, the Talmud Chacham, if somebody else comes and takes revenge on his behalf, then he doesn't have to prevent it. As we see with Shaul. Where Shaul himself, fine, people are saying, we should execute those Bnei Belial, and Shaul is saying no. Shaul himself doesn't have to get his hands dirty with that. He could leave it to other people to do that, and he didn't, and we said that was inappropriate of him. So therefore, that's what we mean. The Talmud Chacham can be nokim benoter kenachash, where somebody else wants to take up wants to take it up on his behalf, then he doesn't necessarily have to protest. But he himself is not necessarily going to go and do the nekima and the netira. He himself maybe would forgive the person. So that's how Rashi learns. Marsha points out it is a little bit of a doichet. And the Ritva actually printed over here explains that it means that he himself he leaves it up to Hashem to so actually the Ritva says it means he leaves it up to Hashem. He's not he's going to allow other people to do it on his behalf, but rather he'll say, I'll leave it up to Hashem. Marsha says no. What it means is that in Meshivim he's not going to be responding. But he can still have in mind that he will act like the Nachash and take the appropriate Nekama. So according to Marasha, it comes out, he would actually be able to do it himself, not just leave it up to Hashem and not just leave it up to third parties. Anyway, the Gemara asks, "Well, Amar Rava, but didn't Rava also say, if a person is ready to forgive on his midas, mavirin, literally mavir amidosa means he goes beyond his midas, in other words, he's not medactic, he's not particular about every single thing that was done to him, he's willing to forego it, mavirin layakop shav, then Hashem is willing to forego his averus. So we see that he should forego it, and he shouldn't be looking to do nakama or leave it up to other people or leave it up to Hashem or whatever. And the answer is mafais ulei mafais. The answer is what that means is if the person asks mechila from him, then he's willing to accept the mechila. But as long as the other person has not asked for mechila, then he should be noken v'noto kenachash. Now, both the Ritva and Marsha point out over here, there is another relevant Gemara about this that tells about one of the Chachamim that he wouldn't go to sleep until he was moichel whoever had wronged him that day. And we have in Kriyas Mashalamita, we have the paragraph about that. So how does that fit with over here? So the Ritva says that there's still the difference. Here we're talking about the Mile Deshmaya. We're talking about where the other person insulted the Talmud Chacham in something or treated him disrespectfully in a way involving Torah. So therefore, so you, the Talmud Chacham, don't necessarily have, you shouldn't be forgiving him because after all, the covenant of the Torah is at stake. Whereas the Gemara over there, and he refers to Shabbos, it's actually the Gemara in Megillah, is talking about where the other person wronged him in Mili D'Alma and in worldly matters. Marsha says differently, that it means that fine, even if the other person might ask Mechila, he might not forgive him on the spot. But before he went to bed, at least he would be Moichel, such a person who would ask Mechila from him earlier in the day. So in practice, in Shulchan Aruch, you have several different details that are over here. Nekima and Netira, we see clearly in the Gemara over here, is also outright when it's a matter of Mamon. Then, as the Rambam says, you have to just completely forget about it and be Moichel the guy. When it's a matter of gufa, when it's a matter of an injury or an insult to him, then from the Gemara over here, it seems to imply that you'd also be able to be noke of a notem in that case, even if you're not a Talmud Chacham. With that say, most of the poskim understand differently and understand all Gemara to be saying that no, even in that case, that would be also, with the exception of a Talmud Chacham, he has a right to be noke of a notem, but again, not to say that he himself will do anything about it, but rather that he will, that if other people get involved, he won't prevent them from doing it. Unless they ask him Mechila, and as the Alter Rebbe points out, if they ask him Mechila, then they're showing that they have covered for the Torah after all, then in that case, he has to be Mechila. So that puts together all the pieces that we have.
But in the case of Tishma Kal, what about David Melvin killing the man who died for his enemy?
So first of all, in the case of those enemies, for they had never asked Mechila, and they're trying to get him killed, or they're trying to do other things like that. There, it's a little more of a serious issue than just merely the Shmaya or merely the Gufa or whatever. And as far as Imichus Shespato, fine. Again, you have, let's say, a Yaakov with a Lavan, then he has to go in an underhanded way in order to get around his machinations. But we're not talking about as far as taking the Nekama from him. Yaakov wasn't out to get the Nekama from Lavan. He's just making sure to safeguard his rights. Okay, so the Gemara goes on, continues talking about. So all of this was a digression because the Gemara had brought up the Mishnah had mentioned that they make the pious among the Kohanim 4 times a day to determine who does what avodah, and the Mishnah had said they do the pious by everybody standing around in a circle and sticking out their fingers, and the question is why we don't count them directly. Okay, so the Perek goes on to discuss the various piyosis that they did, 4 piyosis every day. So the Gemara asks, "Loma mafaisin in the Chula? Why do they make the pious?" And the Gemara says, "What do you mean, loma mafaisin? Kedam moran? We said why, because otherwise there's going to be a machloka. So if the mamuna just chooses a coin at random, then there's going to end up being a machloka. Ella, rather, the question is, loma mafaisin v'chozrin umafaisin? Why to make the pious again and again? Why don't we just gather the Kohanim together all at once, do the first pious, then the second, then the third, then the fourth? Why do them at different times during the day?" And the answer is, "Amar Rabbi Yochanan, k'dal l'hayush kol ha'azara." In order to excite the whole Azara, you have a whole tumult, you have a whole noise of a crowd gathering together. That is a covered for Hashem. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, "Asher yachdav namtik soid." That together, David says, originally it was about Achitofel, that we would discuss sweet secrets of Torah together. In the house of Hashem, we would go with excitement. So we see that there's a point to make an excitement in the Azara, and that's accomplished by having the Kohanim assemble again and again. The Rambam learns actually that they would do the first two piyosis together and the second two together, so it's not 4 different times of the day, but twice a day. Apparently, he holds that's enough regish. We find by the same token as well that the when it came to Hatovas HaNeiros, when it came to preparing and cleaning out the lamps of the menorah, they also did first 5 and then a different avodah and then 2, and for the same reason because and then and for the same reason because Lahavgish is called Azorah in order to make an excitement so that people are seeing the avodah is being done again and again. Okay, the Mishnah says. Pious Ashlishi, the third pious, and again, we talked about the other day, according to the Baal HaMor, these did not take place on Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol, is anyway doing the whole Avodah. According to the Ramban, each of these piyosis is taking place on Yom Kippur because there are details of each of these Avodahs that can be done by regular Kohen. Anyway, Pious Ashlishi, the third pious was Chadot, they announced Chadoshim Lektoras. Anybody who's new, who has never brought Ktoras before, come and join the pious for the Ktoras. And we'll see in the Gemara why they limited it to that. V'harvi, then the fourth pious was Chadoshim im Yeshanim, was at both new and old, whether people have done it before or not. Mimala Ivarim in Akevesh Lamizbeach, who was going to bring up the pieces of the Korbanos from the ramp of the Mizbeach to the Mizbeach, because earlier in the Perek it describes they had. Once they shechted the korban tamid and they cut it up, they had each koyin or each piece would be brought by 1 or 2 koyanim to the ramp of the mizbeach, and then they would salt them. And then the mishnayos and tamid explain. Then they would gather in lushkas agazis and say certain tefillas, and then they would come. Then they would have now another group. Then they would have other koyanim who would come and take them and carry them up the ramp and throw them onto the fire. So the fourth pious was to determine who's going to do those. So the Gemara says, Tana, may olam loshana odam ba, nobody ever repeated, nobody ever brought Ktoras twice. We don't mean the Ktoras of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, of course, we mean the Ktoras that was brought on the Mizbeach HaZahav every day. Nope, since we made the announcement that everybody, that should only be new people, so in fact, you only ever had new people do it every time. My time, so why is that? Why did they make sure to reserve it only for newcomers? Because it makes people rich. So therefore, you want everybody to be able to have a chance at that bracha, and therefore you don't want that the same person should be able to do it again. My time. So where do we get this, that the Torahs that bring the Torahs makes a person rich? You're going to say because in Moshe's bracha, the Shevet Levi, he says they will place Torah ba'pecha, where ba'pecha can mean in your nose, but it can also mean, as Rashi explains on the pasuk, it means against your anger, because as we know from Parshas Korach, the Torah helps so to speak, take away Hashem's anger against the Jewish people. Anyway, Chdiv Basri Baruch Hashem Chelai, and the next pasuk continues, Hashem bless his chel, which means his wealth. So you're going to say that's the connection, because therefore Torah brings wealth. Yihachi Ola Nami. Well, the same thing then should apply to an Ola. Because the pasuk says they will place Torah against your anger, Torah against your anger, and they will place Kolil on your Mizbeach. Kolil implying a carbon Ola, which is completely brut. In fact, a number of the Mephoshim point out over here, Rabbi Hananel and Tosfos Hashanim point out that we actually have a pasuk in Sefer Shmuel that refers to an Ola as Kolil. You don't really have in Chumash, you don't have the word Kolil used in connection with an Ola. You have in connection, for example, with burning the Irani Dachas. But you do have in Sefer Shmuel where it describes that he brought an Ola Kolil. So therefore, so the word Kolil over here clearly refers to an Ola. So why don't we say the same thing, bringing an Ola makes a person rich? Omale. So Abai answers, Hoshchicha v'holei shchicha. The Olas are very common. The Ktores is not. Meaning, Rashi explains, if it was going to be that an Ola has the property of making a person rich, then everybody's going to be rich because they have Olas all the time. Because the Ktores is only a once-a-day thing, there's fewer opportunities for it. Therefore, that helps explain why some Kohenim are rich and some are not. Tosfos Hashanim explains it somewhat differently. He says, if the vote was that an Ola has the capability of making a person rich, then everybody would just go, every Kohen would just go and voluntarily bring an Ola. And the din is when a Kohen has a Korban to bring, he can offer that Korban himself, even if it's not his Mishmor's turn in the Bais HaMikdash. So therefore, and they'd have an easy route to be rich. And the fact is that's not how it works. Therefore, we have to say that no, an Ola does not have that property, only Keturis does. And you can't bring Keturis Nadava, so therefore it was limited only to some people. Okay. In this connection, speaking of the bracha to shave at Levi, Omar Rava, loy mashkachas tzurvim rabbanan demoda, you never find a young Talmud Chacham who teaches and paskins halacha for Jews, elo da'osi mishevet Levi or mishevet Yisachar, unless he comes either from one of these two shvatim, Levi or Yisachar. Levi was given the bracha by Moshe, they will teach your judgments to Yaakov. From Yisachar, there were people who knew the understanding of the times. In particular, they served on the Sanhedrin that determined when Rosh Chodesh is and when an Ibur Yar is. Ladas Mayas Yisrael, to know what the Jewish people should do. So we see that Shevet Yisachar has that quality as well. So the Gemara asks for Eima Nami Yehuda. Why don't you say also Shevet Yehuda should be in that category as well? Dichtiv Yehuda Mechoikiki, as we find the pasuk that says Yehuda is my lawgiver. Now, Tosfos points out, why do we have to bring the pasuk from Tillim? We have the word Mechoikik is found in connection with Yehuda already in Yaakov's brachas, or Mechoikik Ben Raglav. So Tosfos says, because that's only a bracha. But Marshall says, okay, it's a bracha, and Yaakov Avinu's bracha is not going to be Niskayim. So no, Marshall says the vote is, Mechoikik Ben Raglav is talking about over there, doesn't necessarily mean the people who teach Torah. It means the people, means the king's ministers. The pasuk over there, Lo Yosef Shevet Miyahudah, Mechoikik Ben Raglav, is referring to the kings. And then in later times, it refers to the Nesiim in Eretz Yisrael and the Rosh Galusa in Babel. So the Mechoikik would be the people who work under them, the ministers who work for them. That doesn't mean necessarily the people who teach Torah. As opposed to by Levi and by Yisachar, it means that they were appointed by Hashem, and Yehuda Mechoike Ki, on the face of it, means the same thing, Mechoike Ki. This is Hashem speaking and saying Yehuda is my lawgiver. So that means, so from that pasuk from Tillim, it should imply that Yehuda has that capability as well. And the answer is Asukit Shmaita Libidah Hilchsakamunan. What we're talking about is the special ability to be able to conclude according to the correct halacha. That's not something that everybody has. Many people would be able to teach Torah, but to actually come up with a decision in halacha that is correct, not everybody has that quality. And we're saying that Shevet Levi and Yisachar have that. Marsha points out, we find that David, who was from Shevet Yehuda, had that quality. But that's just it. He was the king, so he had that special quality. Other people from Shevet Yehuda don't necessarily have that schos. As opposed to Levi and Yisachar, we're saying even regular people from that Shevet. Ben Yehoyada points out, the fact is we do find great Talmid Chachamim who taught the whole Jewish people from other Shvatim as well. Start with, for example, Yoshua is from Shevet Ephraim. We mean on the whole, in general, you have individuals, you have in various generations, you have like that. But generation after generation that you'll have, that the, you have from a particular Shevet, you have people who are able to paskin halacha and teach halacha to the whole Jewish people. You find those only in Shevet Levi and Shevet Yisachar. The Gemara continues. Afterwards, the Mishnah starts listing later on in the Perek. It talks about the numbers of Koyanim who would do various avodas. Like this, one of the piyosis was the second pious was who shechts the korban tamid, who does the kabbalah sadam, the receiving the blood in the basin, who sprinkles on the mizbeach, and then you had a bunch of koyanim were chosen to bring the pieces of the korban after it's cut up, to bring them along with the flour and wine and oil that went together with it, and along with the minchas chavitin, to bring them to the ramp of the mizbeach. Then the Mishnah goes on to talk about. Now, the Korban Tamid was a baby sheep. Then you have different numbers of Koyanim when you have a ram being brought as a Korban, because a ram has a larger amount of Nesachim. And then you have, for a bull, you have even more, because a bull, not only are the limbs of the bull themselves much larger, so you have a piece that, by a sheep or by a ram, one Koyan could carry a couple of pieces, and by a bull, you need, for example, three people to carry one piece. So you have more, plus you have a larger amount of flour and wine and oil. So the Mishnah mentions the concept that the Mishnah mentions the concept that when it comes to the Korban Tamid itself, you'd have anywhere between 9 and 12 people who are bringing things to the Mizbeach in connection with the Tamid. The base number is 9, and then you have, for example, on Shabbos you have the Shnei Bazichei Levoina, and on Sukkot you have the flask of water for Nisach HaMayim, and on the afternoon you have Shnei Gizri Eitzim, and so. Like Gemara mentions, Omer of Abba, Vitamer Romi Bachoma, Vitamer of Yechanan, Ein Menaskin Mayim Bachag, Elabatomit Shal Shacham. The Nisuch HaMayim on Sukkot is done only by the morning Korban Tamid. And the Gemara proves it from the Mishnah over here, because since the Mishnah has that, when do you have 12? It says when a day of Sukkot comes out on Shabbos. So then you have two extra people with the Shnei Bazichei Levoina, plus you have one with the jug of water. As opposed to, in other words, if you did it by Mincha as well, then you would also have that any Mincha during Sukkot, because you'd have any Korban Tamid of Shalben Abayim on Sukkot, because you'd have two people carrying the logs of wood and one carrying the jug of water. So that implies that therefore Nisuch HaMayim is not done in the afternoon on Sukkot. So Omer of Ashi, Afanan Nami Tanena. In fact, we learn in a Mishnah in Sukkah that bears out that point as well, where it says, "V'lamenasech Omer lehagba yadecha." When the person was doing, whichever Kohen it was doing the Nisuch HaMayim, they would tell him, "Lift up your hand, so that we can all see that you're pouring it into the basin that's on top of the mizbeach." Because one time a tzduki poured the water on his feet, because the Nisuch HaMayim is poured at Torah Shabbat Peh, and the tzdukim didn't believe in that. And everybody pelted them with their esrogim. The point is, why would it have to mention that they used esrogim? In fact, the Oruch HaNer adds the point. The fact is, the Yerushalmi says they also threw rocks. Rashi mentions, actually, on the Gemara and Sukkah, that they also threw rocks at him. So what would be the point of mentioning that they threw esrogim is to stress that this happened during the Tomid Shal Shachar, when they have the Lulavim and esrogim with them, because they're going to be davening Shacharis and saying Hallel. So that also implies, therefore, by mentioning that detail, the Mishnah is implying that there's never any Nusach HaMayim during the Tomid Shal Ben Habayim. The Gemara says Tana Rabbanan. Now, this actually goes back a little bit earlier in the Perek. At the beginning of the first Mishnah of the Perek mentions like this: when it came the first avoda of the day in the Bis Mikdash is Trumas Adeshin, is going up onto the Mizbeach, taking a silver pan and scooping up some of the ashes from the Mizbeach and depositing them on the floor next to the Mizbeach. We say it every morning in davening. So that's the first avoda of every day. Now, originally, the Mishnah describes they didn't make a pious for it. The Gemara explains because they figured it's the first thing in the morning. It's around dawn. Many kohenim, not that many kohenim, are going to be interested in getting up that early. Therefore, they figured there's no need for a pious. So instead, the Mishnah describes they would have a foot race up the ramp of the Mizbeach. So it would be whoever wanted to do it would do it. And if there were two or more candidates, then they would have a foot race up the ramp of the Mizbeach, and whoever won the race would be the one to do the Avodah. However, the Mishnah says that one time, one of them was about to lose the race, and he pushed the other one, and he fell off and broke his leg. So then the Mishnah says, after that, they made a pious for that Avodah too. Now, the Gemara tells us that there was actually another story, not just involving where a person broke his leg, but where a person was actually killed. The Gemara ends up explaining that actually what happened was that there were two stories. First, there was a case where a person was killed, but they figured that's a one-off. It's not that likely that's ever going to happen again. Then there was another case where somebody was knocked off and broke his leg, and then they realized, you know what, this is getting to be too common, so therefore we better make a pious. So now the Gemara tells Tanaramanan, Maisim Bez Koinim Show Shneim Shavim. It happened that two Koinim were racing up the ramp of the Mizbeach over there, and they were both neck and neck. The Rotzim Ba'olim Kevesh, and they're both running up the Kevesh. Kodim Echan Man Lasek Dalad Amos Shachaber. One of them got ahead, and he's within four Amos of the other one, so he's about to overtake him and win the race. Notel Sakin V'Tokaloi B'Liboy. The one who was about to lose took a knife and stuck it into the other one's heart. Omer Reb Tzadik al Maila Sa'ulam Bahar Abayis. Reb Tzadik, this was not long before the Churban. This is the same Reb Tzadik who famously fasted for 40 years before the Churban. He stood on the steps of the Ulam Bahar Abayis. Rashi actually mentions, now usually the word Ulam means the front entrance of the Heichal. But here it doesn't mean that. For one thing, because the point is, he wants what he's going to be saying to be widely heard. And if he stands on the steps of the Heichal, not that many people are going to hear him, because not everybody is allowed to go into the Azara. So rather, Rashi brings from Sefer Yosefon, from Josephus' histories, that there were a bunch of ulamos, there were a bunch of hallways built all around the Har HaBayis. So Reb Tzadik stood on the steps of one of those hallways in a place where there's many people in the Har HaBayis, and this way everybody would hear what he has to say. V'omar, and he calls out, Achenu Beis Yisrael Shmo, our brothers, the Jewish people, listen. We know the Pasuk says, Ki motze chola ba'adama, when you find a dead body in the land in Eretz Yisrael, and you don't know who killed him, then the members of the Beis Din have to go out and they have to measure and find the closest city and they have to bring an Egla Rufa. So Reb Tzadik asks, Anu ammi lanu lahavi Egla Rufa. In this case, what should we bring an Egla Rufa for? Al ha'ir or al ha'azores? Should we be bringing for the whole city of Yerushalayim or just for the Azores of the Beis Mikdash? Because the murder happened in the Beis Mikdash. Go kola ammi b'chia, and everybody burst out crying, realizing how bad things had gotten. In fact, Marsha says one point at the end, the Gemara is going to say over here that really there's no Egla Arufa in this case at all. So part of the crying was precisely because there's not going to be an Egla Arufa in this case. Everybody's crying, realizing in that case, what do we have for a kapara even? Anyway, continues the Braisa. But Aviv Shaltinik, the father of this young man who had been stabbed, came Umotze Kruma Farfa. He found that his son was still moving. He's not quite dead yet. But Omelahem, he says to the people, Harehu Kaparaschem, he should be your kapara. In other words, his death should be a kapara for you. Va'adayin b'nim afarfer, but look, my son is still moving. V'lo nitma hasakin, therefore the knife is not tome yet. So in other words, he's saying, take the knife away before it becomes tome, because as long as he's alive, it won't become tome from him. But once he dies, it will become tome. Lalamdecha, the Braisa tells you, this teaches you, Shakosha Alam Taras Kalim Yosim of Shvichos Domim. They considered the concept that Kalim should remain Tahar, they treated that more seriously even than Shvichos Domim, which shows a lack of proper priorities. V'chein ho'omer, we find similarly by the first Beis Hamikdash, V'gam Dom Noki Shofach Menashe Harbi Ma'od V'gamer, where it says Menashe spilled a lot of innocent blood in Yerushalayim, and therefore, Marsha says, the point is, even though this is hundreds of years later, the point is that there was still an after effect, that mentality that Shvichos Damim is not such a serious thing still persisted hundreds of years later in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash. Okay, so we'll revisit the story and finish it up tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGa'ola, Ches Cheshvan. The Rebbe was talking in at the beginning of Tavshin Nun Aleph, late 1990, that you had hundreds of thousands of Jews from Russia who were going free and coming closer to Torah and Mitzvahs. This is a me'ein, this is an example, and this is a preparation for the kibbutz Golias of the times of Mashiach. As we have in the Pasuk, Kohol Gadol, Yoshev Hena, a great congregation of Jews will return here. So that was a beginning and a foretaste of that, as we have, like we say in Shabbos davening, Tayameh Chaim Zachu, those who taste from the food of Shabbos ahead of time will be zoicha to return a life. So now we got a foretaste of Yemos Mashiach before it actually happened.
That's halacha, yes.
The halacha is the minhag is you're supposed to taste the Shabbos food before Shabbos. Yeah. It's Bon Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, it's a strong minhag. Okay, continuing with halachas of Shabbos, specifically of halachas haneiros, the best way of doing the mitzvah is to use olive oil. For that matter, he says, oh, there was another kind of oil that was common in their times, flour oil, whatever that is. I don't know what it would be nowadays. That's also kosher. Other kinds of oil, some kinds are not kosher. You have a second paragraph of Shabbos lists the detail because some kinds of oil don't burn so easily. As far as wicks, better they should be made. The best is that they should be made out of cotton or linen. The Alter Rebbe makes the point, if you're going to use flax, it has to be combed flax. Uncombed flax is actually mentioned in the Mishnah over there as one of the things you can't use. Or another possibility is you use canvas, which is hemp. All those other, again, you have various kinds of other materials that are not kosher. Where the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is writing, he says they would use candles made out of tallow, out of fat. Those are also kosher. However, the Alter Rebbe says better to use wax or paraffin more than chalev. You can't just put a piece of tallow in a container and then put a wick in it. That would be also, that's one of the things mentioned in that Mishnah of Shabbos because it doesn't burn so well. But a candle made out of tallow, like Yotzeit candles, those would be allowed. When you're lighting candles, you have to make sure that the part of the wick that sticks out of the fuel, that most of it is lit. Regardless what kind of candle we're talking about, you have that most of the flame, the, you hold the match there or whatever until most of the part of the wick that's sticking out light, is alight.